Hurry before it melts.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. After much drama, the American food colossus Kraft is expected to launch an official bid today for the British candy maker Cadbury. We get more from Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London.
Kraft has already made an informal approach to Cadbury, but its $16 billion bid was rebuffed by the Cadbury board. The chairman dismissed the American company as a low-growth conglomerate. A member of the founding Cadbury family rubbed salt in the wound. She equated Kraft with plastic cheese on hamburgers. Today, Kraft faces a deadline. Under British takeover rules, it must make an official offer for Cadbury or walk away and stay away for 6 months. Justin Urquhart-Stewart is head of Seven Investment. He says the American company may have to increase its offer. Kraft seems to need Cadbury more than Cadbury needs Kraft.
Cadbury's have come out recently with some really pretty good figures, pretty resilient to the recession and showing good overseas income as well. Whereas Kraft's figures weren't bad, but probably not as good as they had been expecting.
Kraft does have one thing in its favour, however, no other bidders have so far entered the fray. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In other chocolate news, the dairy industry starts a new ad campaign today that's not going down well with some health activists.
I raise my hand for chocolate milk because it's a delicious way for my children to get the 9 essential nutrients that their bodies need to grow healthy and strong.
The ad has a mix of celebrities and nutritionists telling you if you put chocolate in it, kids will drink more milk. To which critics respond, yeah, kids will drink chocolate milk if you give them the choice. So, don't. Now, got numbers? Both European and Asian stock markets are higher this morning. Apparently, investors think America's high unemployment means at least we'll be keeping interest rates low, and that's good for stocks. Last week sure was. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, Dow Industrials all added more than 3%. That's a 311-point gain for the Dow on the week. It closed Friday at 10,023. Oil is back up near $79 a barrel this morning, partly because Hurricane Ida is headed toward the Gulf of Mexico with all its oil fields. Later today, cutting-edge technology companies like software developers and biotech engineers will be watching the Supreme Court closely. The justices are going to hear arguments in a case that asks what kind of innovations can be patented. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has our story.
10 years ago, a Pittsburgh company tried to patent a way of trading commodities contracts, but the U.S. Patent Office decided it didn't fit the definition since it wasn't a new machine or transformative process, and the Court of Appeals agreed. But Mike Jakes at the Finnegan Law Firm says the company had good grounds for appealing to the Supreme Court.
The real question is this an abstract method or not? And we don't believe it is because it's an actual method that can be used to manage consumption risks in a commodity market.
But Stephen Schreiner, a patent attorney with Goodwin Procter, says that innovation was more an idea than an invention.
So the court's view was that applicant was trying to patent this broad concept of hedging using contracts.
Lots of high-tech companies worry a narrow patent definition will jeopardize their rights to idea-based products like software or even pharmaceuticals. They're hoping the Supreme Court rules in their favor next spring. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The Financial Times reports an empty office complex in L.A. is costing News Corp $1 million a month. The company signed a 12-year lease on the complex last year for its hot property, MySpace, which is not so hot anymore, so it doesn't need the space. News Corp says it wants to sublet the complex, but has not been able to find a renter.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com. American Public Media presents Workplace You, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the University of Virginia's Batten Institute. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
So far this year, 115 American banks have failed, and experts think there are plenty more to come. So how can you tell how your bank is doing? Well, one predictor is the so-called Texas ratio. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports this is one test where getting a high score is a bad thing.
To calculate the Texas ratio, you take the bank's non-performing loans and divide that number by the tangible equity capital plus money set aside for future loan losses. Are you confused yet? Bart Narder follows banks for Celent, a consulting firm. He has a simpler way of explaining it.
It's essentially bad stuff divided by good stuff.
Put that way, it's easy to see the logic. The more good stuff you have on your books, the better shape you're in. When the ratio of bad stuff to good stuff is around 1-to-1, the bank is more likely to fail. And there are plenty of banks whose Texas ratios are right around there. Georgia has the most because banks there were overexposed to bad real estate, but Florida, Illinois, and Minnesota are all well represented. Narder says it's important to realize a bad ratio doesn't guarantee failure.
It's a ratio like many other ratios that should be used as a guide. It is a reasonable snapshot. It does not predict the future.
And there's a twist. The ratio's accuracy depends on banks reporting their own losses.
That number is subjective. You sort of have to guess at that one.
David Byme is a finance professor at Columbia.
And there are banks that do that conservatively, and there's banks that do that less conservatively.
He says it is possible for a bank to be too honest. If they report tons of bad loans and rack up a high score, their Texas ratio could turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, why does a papaya need a sex change? Well, see, a papaya plant comes in three genders, male, female, and hermaphrodite, and only the hermaphrodite makes the tasty fruit. The problem is hermaphrodite seeds don't always produce hermaphrodite plants, and you can't tell what you've got until it grows up, so farmers have to plant a whole bunch of seeds just in case. Waste of water, waste of fertilizer, waste of money. So now this University of Illinois plant biologist has a $3 million National Science Foundation grant to make a hermaphrodite papaya that only makes other hermaphrodite papayas. Genetic modification opponents say this is dangerous. Papaya farmers say they will be passing the savings on to you. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.